Good morning, everyone. Myth-making, fact-checking, and when emotion takes over the media in an important story like the Fort Hood tragedy, with the benefit of about a week's hindsight, we can begin to see the facts emerging. Certainly a week ago when we were covering this story, there was a lot that was supposedly known about the tragedy that turned out not to be true. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But the big story out of Fort Hood this morning, of course, the shooter, Nedal Malik Hassan, charged with 13 counts of premeditated murder yesterday. And that charge means he's eligible, shall we say, for the death penalty. And military prosecutors are hard at work of pushing that investigation forward. Campbell Robertson of our partner, The New York Times, is in Killeen, Texas, the town outside the base there at Fort Hood. He joins us now. Dave Cullen is still with us, the author of Columbine, about the Columbine High School massacre. Campbell Robertson, good morning.
Good morning.
So, first of all, let's talk about the charges that were filed. Not much surprise there. But anything about the demeanor or tone of military prosecutors that struck you?
Not particularly. I mean, there's a lot of investigation to go. There hasn't been any indication yet, and the fact that this is in a military court, I guess, is the strongest signifier that they still think that he has pretty much done this alone. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of investigation to go, but everything they're saying so far seems to signify a belief that he did this by himself.
And, you know, again, I don't want to get you into speculative zone here, but as you talk with members of the community, is there buzz that he might not have acted alone? I mean, there's no sort of facts that would support that at this point, but is that on people's minds?
Oh, of course. And, you know, especially for people who depend on the military, I mean, there's a lot of, people would be pretty frustrated if there were clear signs that this guy should have been tagged and dealt with long before this. And you know, you definitely pick that up talking with people in the community that they want to make sure that the military did all they could to keep tabs on a guy like this and to make sure this didn't happen.
Let's talk about victims' families. How are they doing? It's a week later. Of course, the 13 were killed, and their families have one thing to deal with, but there were many who were injured.
You know, I think the hard part is kind of starting. I mean, you know, this segment began, I guess, on the show today about the media, and in a weird way, it sort of allows the survivors to put off dealing with it, because it's just been a complete, you know, it's a madhouse of TV cameras and reporters down here for a week, and people are kind of, you know, the media's kind of moving out of here, and I think now it's going to get to some really hard times for the survivors, because now they're kind of just left to themselves to deal with this.
You know, there was a fact that we reported on the program last Friday that was sourced to a doctor who was told by someone at a hospital that when Nedal Malik Hassan opened fire, he was screaming the Arabic God is great, Allahu Akbar. Describe how you confirmed that fact, because that's one of those myth-making, too-hot-to-handle kind of details that, if not true, could cause people to draw all kinds of conclusions.
You know, it kind of surprises me that this element has gotten such attention. I mean, obviously it's important, but with all the other details. But in any case, you know, we first heard it from an eyewitness and one eyewitness, and then two congressmen who were briefed by witnesses. And since then, in our reporting about the survivors and about the wounded, we've heard it confirmed, you know, I guess 3, 4, 5 times. I'd have to look at my notebook, by witnesses who were in the room. It's pretty much every eyewitness who was there when the shooting started that we've talked to has confirmed that he did say Allahu Akbar.
All right. Well, Campbell Robertson, thanks for the update. New York Times reporter in Killeen, Texas, reporting on the aftermath a week later of the Fort Hood tragedy. Dave Cullen now, author of Columbine, about the Columbine High School massacre. You know, you can hear in Campbell Robertson's voice the mix of worry, fear, mythology, concern, and the fact-checking that's required to keep things on the straight and narrow. What are your reactions?
Well, I think that's the right approach. And I think the media has really gotten so much better since Columbine. We collectively, I think, have learned our lessons. You've just got to be really careful. The Allahu Akbar thing you were just talking about is crucial, because people will conclude so much from that. And it sounds like they have, you know, they've pushed, they've talked to a lot of people. My single caution there is still as compromised witnesses. Hopefully, I assume he's gone back to some of those witnesses that had the chance
right.
to go back and ask them how they know this and if they heard it directly. Because so often, one witness will go on TV, it'll get to TV, other witnesses will hear it,
and will repeat that
without having heard it themselves. And sometimes they come to believe they've heard it, because memory is really, really open to persuasion.
And that's like the story of this alleged hero woman who was said to have stopped him by shooting him. It turned out not to be true. In thinking about Columbine this morning, I was reminded that there was a religious dimension to that story. Remind us of what that was all about.
Yes, you know, one of the really biggest, most enduring myths about Columbine is this idea of this Christian martyr, Cassie Bernal, who the story went, was asked by one of the killers whether she believed in God. She said yes, and then he killed her. And that actually became the title of a best-selling book, She Said Yes, The Unlikely Martyrdom of Cassie Bernal.
Wow.
Written by her mother, who I think believed it at the time. It turned out to just be a complete misunderstanding. Another girl, Val Schnurr, had a conversation with a killer. She had already been shot multiple times, really badly wounded, close to dying, but she lived to tell. So it was one witness, Craig Scott, who was sitting under a table, who heard the conversation, who jumped to an incorrect conclusion about who it was, and the story took off from there. You know, I actually interviewed Val Schnurr,
right.
The girl who really said it, for about 5 hours earlier this week, and she is really to this day still haunted by that mix-up, because so many people accused her of being a liar and trying to profit off the copy or the the myth. So
you make an amazing point. People are so suggestible at moments like this. The experience of learning something that is that haunting and devastating has its own reality. Even if the fact is wrong, the reaction to it becomes its own story. Dave Cullen, thanks so much. It's an interesting context. Author of Columbine, about the Columbine High School massacre, comparing in some sense with some of the myths or potential myths coming out of the Fort Hood tragedy. Thanks, Dave.